Charles Leclerc winning for Ferrari at the Italian Grand Prix, and you're joining the Forecast F1 podcast, and I'm being joined by, first of all, by Sam. Sam, iconic weekend, or am I taking it too far?
No, you're not at all. Iconic weekend, I think emotional race, definitely, at least for me, it was incredible.
Agreed. And I think it's very fitting that for this episode, we have a Leclerc fan as a guest and also my cousin, Friso. Very nice that you could join us for today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I think it was a really, really cool race to see. I think Monza is always iconic, of course, being one of the first races ever to be in the calendar. So, yeah, really nice to have me on as the Leclerc fan as well after this really great race. So, yeah, looking forward to this podcast.
Yeah, I think we've said it quite a few times this season, but a lot of things to talk about this race. So let's get into it, and let's start talking first about a couple of things prior to this weekend being announced. I think one of the main things to talk about first is that after last race in the Netherlands, we heard that Williams would replace Logan Sargeant with Franco Colapinto straight from F2 into the car for the last 9 races. Sam, was that a surprise to you?
No, I think that actually the biggest surprise I had was that it didn't happen sooner. Although I did like Logan, I think that results obviously are the most important thing for the team right now. And if they can recover anything towards the end of the season, maybe they will with some fresh blood in the car.
And Friso, were you surprised that they went with Colapinto rather than, let's say, Lawson or Mick Schumacher?
I think Lawson and Mick Schumacher are like really cool talents to see as well, but I think Colapinto is making his points, and I think it's cool to see where he will go to the season. And I think it's a bit surprising. I mean, there are other people standing in line as well, but yeah, no, it's cool to see still.
Yeah, and I think it's generally nice that teams stick with drivers that are in their junior program, so I think that is in that respect, it's a good move for Williams. And I think he also shown that, well, we'll go into his performance over the weekend. Another announcement, not only driving free practice one, but also being the second Mercedes driver for next year, is Andrea Kimi Antonelli, Sam. I guess that was one of the worst kept secrets on the grid, wasn't it?
It certainly was. I mean, we were just talking about this last weekend, the fact that it was pretty much a signed, sealed, and delivered situation when it came to Kimi securing the second driver's seat. I think that, you know, it's great to see him driving the Mercedes car for the weekend, just testing it out a little bit, stretching the legs, so to speak. But we really won't know exactly how that translates until next season. So, there's a lot of buzz, there's a lot of hype around him, and he clearly comes with a significant amount of potential. But like I said, we'll see, time will tell, and next year is going to be really exciting, and I think that we will have to just see what the results are going to be for him.
Bit of a rough start in the first practice session for him, Friso. He basically on the, I think it was the second lap, his second push lap, he went into the gravel and into the wall.
Yeah, I think it's a rookie mistake, but of course he is a rookie, and I think he's pushing it. He has the pace. I mean, he actually showed quite some good times on, I think, those first runs. Of course, parking in the wall is not the greatest to do in your first outing, but yeah, I'm curious to see what he will do in the Mercedes seat. Yeah, it's quick to get there, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign that he's not afraid to push on on one of the first few laps that he's in that car. So definitely very exciting. And other than that, I think the practice sessions were interesting to watch. I think getting out of the Zandvoort weekend, we were all questioning to what extent the McLaren really was as dominant as they showed in Zandvoort. Of course, Norris won there with a 22-second lead, but we don't know, or we didn't know to what extent that was slightly exaggerated due to the circumstances, due to the setup difficulties of Red Bull. So I think everybody watching free practice sessions was curious to see how the McLaren would do compared to the Red Bull, definitely also on especially on long runs, but also how would Ferrari do, and how would they rank against Mercedes, I suppose. I think rather than talking too much about free practice sessions, I think it would be cool to get into the Saturday and the second session of the Saturday, which was qualifying. Sam, what do you think were the highlights of qualifying?
Well, I think there were a few things that we could definitely highlight from qualifying. I would say that looking at the, if we start going into, let's say, the Q1 results, Yuki Tsunoda not making it past Q1, that was unfortunate for him. So I say that was a little bit surprising, and also for Stroll as well. I mean, we've seen Aston Martin this year struggle with pace, but recently they were doing fairly well, and they had a decent race weekend last weekend, so I actually had more of an expectation for them going into Monza, so that was a little surprising. And then if we carry into Q2, I would say seeing Alonso out in Q2 was unfortunate, and I would say I would have expected to see Ricardo maybe sneak into Q3, but to see him in Q2 wasn't all that surprising as well. I would say the one thing that I would take from qualifying, aside from obviously the McLaren lockout 1-2, which was a fantastic result for them to head into the race weekend, but the few things that the one thing that I would take that was really exciting setting up for the weekend was that the leading six cars in qualifying that finished overall, they covered less than 0.2 seconds. So That was a really exciting thing. I mean, seeing the gap so small, providing such an opportunity, especially on a track like Monza, where you know that the competition is going to be tight. Of course, I would say the most surprising result, at least I would take out of qualifying, would have been Verstappen's result. Friso, what was your takes when it came to qualifying, and also when it came to Verstappen finishing where he did?
Yeah, I think Verstappen just left it hanging. I mean, I don't think he had the best weekend at first. Of course, FP1 I think was alright, but then after that, I think he's not really in a good mindset as well, because last races are just not going as I think they're going his way, and I think his anger sort of gets the best of him sometimes. And I think this qualifying was a good example of that, like how he's just trying to push it over what he's maybe his car is able to do right now, trying to get near those McLarens. I think he's just pushing it a little bit too hard right now, and I mean P7 for Verstappen, that's just pretty shamed.
Yeah, that's not really what we're used from him. I agree, Sam. To come back on some of the points you made, only 0.2 between P1 and P6. But if you look at actually the difference between P2 and P6, there was less than 0.1 seconds there. I think it was actually
right.
Norris who took pole by a bit of a margin. But what was behind him? It was so super close, which is very exciting. And I think in that Q3 session where you saw the Mercedes, well, in all the first flying laps, it was basically the two McLarens, then the two Mercedes, then the two Ferraris, then the two Red Bulls. And then on the second flying laps, you saw that Ferrari first was able to improve on both the Mercedes times, but then in the end, again, Russell was able to set it on the second row, being quicker than Leclerc. You mentioned Stroll out in Q1. I think he was actually very, very unfortunate, because he was on a flying lap and he was right behind Magnussen when Magnussen decided to slow down. And I still fail to understand completely why he did that, causing a yellow flag in the third sector. And there were a couple of drivers, and Stroll was one of them. I think Bottas was the other, who weren't able to finish their flying laps and therefore didn't make it into Q2. Actually, I think Ricardo was a bit further behind that, and he wasn't hampered by that yellow flag, and was able to get into Q2. So, yeah, interestingly, there too in Q1 we saw that Colapinto also slightly got into the gravel, was able to keep it on track, but was very close to losing it there too. You see him just as well also having, well, making, like Friese was mentioning, you know, you're going to expect rookies to make mistakes like those. And also, I think in the same free practice session as where Antonelli was in the wall, I think he also went into the gravel, but didn't make it into the wall as hard. In Q1, we also saw an unsafe release of Piastri. Actually, we saw two unsafe releases. I think the second one's actually in Q3. That was Leclerc. That wasn't as bad, but the Piastri one blocking Verstappen. I was doubting whether they were going to give a penalty for that, but I think in the end it was just a fine. Was that fair?
I thought it was questionable, because I mean it was pretty close. And look, the only reason why I say questionable is because we have seen penalties given out for similar situations. What were your thoughts, Friso? Did you think that it was a fair result?
I think with FIA it depends on the driver. Sometimes they hand out fines to drivers because they did certain things in the past. If you look at it that way, I don't think the fine was really there, like should be there. But
yeah, I guess also, you know, in qualifying sessions, they're less harsh on the driver compared to when it's during the race. Of course, it usually results in a penalty. Anyway, in the end, a pretty convincing 1-2 for McLaren, which I guess was very exciting for them getting into the Sunday. Another thing I would like to mention is that where we criticize Perez pretty often, and I wouldn't say that P8 is such a great grip position, but at least he wasn't half a second off Verstappen's time, who, as Friese was mentioning, was struggling quite a bit. I think on his first flying lap in Q3, he had an issue in the last corner, and on his second flying lap he also wasn't great, but at least Perez wasn't as far off as he usually is. And the other two drivers that did make it into Q3 that don't make it into Q3 every day, although to be fairly honest with you, Hülkenberg does make it into Q3 a lot, but also Albon, continuing his performance, because he qualified, wasn't it? Was it P8 or P7 in Zandvoort before he was being disqualified? I think it was P8. And he continued his form, and as we know, wasn't disqualified for this one. So Williams, I guess, you know, building on their on the car upgrades, and actually seemed very decent. Although we know that the Williams has been decent in Monza pretty often, but that was usually because their setup was very good on low downforce tracks, and not so good on tracks with a lot of slow corners. But here in Monza they usually do good, although I'm not so sure if that Williams is set up in exactly the same way as it has been in the past few years, but a very decent result for Albon making it into Q3 and even qualifying P9.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's also something that you touched on there discussing Williams, is those upgrades. You know, again, we saw that introduction of significant upgrades that were put to the vehicle, and that was last weekend. And although there wasn't a great result that came of that, we're now seeing more of how those upgrades have improved the car, and they clearly have. I mean, one of the most significant, aside from the floor, was the actual redesign of the side pods themselves that they had thought was going to improve in terms of their speed. So I think it does look like it's a positive result. And again, for Albon, that's a pretty decent result to manage to secure P9.
Yeah, and actually managed to do so in the race as well. Let's talk a little bit about the race. Let's talk a little bit about the Sunday.
Can't wait.
First of all, I think we're all ready to go. who were ready to go on hards at the start of the race were the two Red Bulls and a couple of other drivers further back. Ocon, Tsunoda, Stroll, also Bottas started on hards. I think that was an interesting call, Friso, from the Red Bulls to both start on the hards.
Yeah, I don't really know why they went on the same tactic. I think Red Bull just really let it hanging on the strategy today. I mean, seeing what every other team is doing, and they still chose to do two hards. It wouldn't be my strategy, but I'm not a Red Bull Red Bull strategist. So yeah.
Do you want a wee one in the future?
maybe there's an opening available.
Well, yeah, I mean, they can call me.
I think that the thing about Red Bull is that we're seeing again that we're not used to seeing is that their struggles that they're having, and it's not just in one area, it's in a few areas. I mean, even with the pit stop for Verstappen, I think it was over 6 seconds, one of his last pit stops, which again, normally they are very much on point in these areas. And I think it also, you can look at something like that and you can also see how strong the team actually has been, because I believe that in terms of consistency over the last 2-3 years, they have been the most consistent team time and time again, whether it's in their garage, whether it's with their drivers, whether it is with the pit stop strategy or and the strategy. So I think it also goes to show just how strong of a team that they have been, and it's not easy to be consistent time and time again. Now they're going through, I would say, quite a rough patch. Although, is it significant enough to cost them the world championship with Max? I don't know. I think that's going to be a, I think he's secured quite a bit of, it would take a lot. And, but I mean, could this be, these situations be a direct result of them potentially losing the constructors? I think that's definitely on the table for discussion.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think Mercedes and Red Bull have shown in the past they're like one of the most stable teams out there on the grid. And McLaren and Ferrari, right, they have some, well, questionable strategies. And I think it really goes to show that they're making a mistake now, and everyone is like, why are they doing this? How could they do this? Which I think really goes to show that, like, once when Ferrari does this or when McLaren does this, they are like, ah, yeah, of course, it's that team. But with Red Bull, it's like, really, why are you doing it? And yeah, I think it may cost the constructors, because yeah, I think they're really underperforming right now. But I think it really goes show how they're coming out of this rough patch, as you say. So yeah, I think it really opens up for other teams to maybe pitch in and get some points from Red Bull.
Yeah, and continuing a little bit on the strategy calls, like you were saying, Friso, that they started both on the hard tires. And if you would do that, then what I was surprised with is that not only do they start on the same tire, but you know, they could have split the strategies also, both starting on hards, but let's say one going for a one stopper and the other one going for a two stopper. But both of them, maybe they did consider it, but they both went from hards to hards pretty early on in the race, like in lap 22, I think, Verstappen pitted, and at 24 it was Perez. So I was slightly surprised there too. Let's switch the focus a little bit and talk about McLaren, and let's go back to the start of the race. I think that's an interesting moment where I think for the past few years perhaps, we've been talking about Norris not having having great race starts. He did manage to keep the lead into turn one, but it was a few corners later where he lost it to Piastri. How did you I think it was an exciting start, Friso.
Oh yeah, it was definitely exciting. Always fun to see two teams actually competing, and like, they're able to race each other, which is nice. I mean, 10 years ago, you see, look at Mercedes, well, it can go either way. But yeah, I think it's fun to see that they're actually racing. Going in the first chicane, actually, I think went perfect. And then second chicane, Piastri just threw his car in front of Norris, and he just hoped Norris would brake quicker or like faster, which he fortunately did, and it went fine. But yeah, it's a risky move, and doing that to your teammate, who is, I think they're pretty good friends as well, wouldn't be the most smart way to go into overtaking it. But I think it worked out, and yeah, I mean, he was P1 from start on, but yeah, doing that overtake, he made sure that Norris got P3, so yeah, I wouldn't do it.
Sam, were you surprised that McLaren let the two drivers fight on the first lap, given their lockout on the front row, and having the Red Bulls quite far behind them? Were you expecting them to fight?
Well, you know, I gotta say, I don't know what to expect when it comes to the McLaren strategy, it seems, as of recently, because sometimes when I think that they're going to make a specific move that would or strategic decision that would maybe benefit the team as a whole or maybe the championship, they do something that's more questionable. So I think based on the recent history, I wouldn't necessarily say that I could expect them to race or not to race. I would say that the logical side of maybe securing the 1-2 would have me say maybe don't put elbows out, because of course going into that turn and seeing that was definitely a nail biter. But as a racing fan, as someone who loves the sport, I gotta say that was one of the best moves I've seen all season. The way that Piastri late braked into that corner and made the move when he did took a lot of guts, and I think it was extremely well, it was very well executed by him, and also for Lando, because for Lando, if he had have stayed aggressive, then we may not have seen as clean of a move as it was. However, aside from that, taking that out of account into account, we then saw Leclerc actually capitalize on that situation. And although Piastri was able to secure the lead, it was, in hindsight, also a disadvantage for McLaren in that moment, because instead of keeping the strength, we saw a situation where now Leclerc was in second and also Lando further back. And for the first little while, Leclerc had quite a small gap with Piastri before he decided to open it up.
Yeah, and Norris was struggling here and there. I think we were all expecting him to get a penalty for crossing the speed limiter also on his first pit stop when he also touched the bollard. I think Norris had a difficult first part of the race there. But Friso, we already considered you as a strategist for Red Bull. If you were a McLaren strategist, would you have switched them around at the end of the race? Piastri and
Oh no, definitely not. I think the overtake was hard, but it was fair, I'd say. And yeah, I think Norris made his fair share of issues. Had his fair share of issues along the race, I think. Made some mistakes as well, and I wouldn't have switched him around, I think.
But as a result, we see that Piastri scores 3 more points than Norris does in the championship. And we already had Hungary, where team orders resulted in Piastri scoring 7 more points. That's 10 points they're leaving on the board for Norris in the fight against Verstappen. So, you know, when it was obvious that Leclerc would win the race, you know, on that last lap, you're not giving away a race win for Piastri. I don't know. I think it would have been very considerable for McLaren to switch the two around. No, Sam?
Yeah, you know, I think that in this case, this is a situation where team orders would have been at least an opportunity for them to recover a bit of what they lost this weekend. Because yes, it would have given Lando some well-needed points. They had an opportunity to give him the additional points because of the positions that they were in. So yeah, I think that if I'm looking at it from a team standpoint, strategically, I think that it would have made the most sense. However, at the same time, I don't know. I don't know where their thought process is at times, because although they mention, we've seen it in previous races where they wanted to do team orders. We obviously saw that situation play out between Piastri and Norris just a few races ago. But we also saw a situation this weekend where they made it very clear over the radio, even to Norris towards the end of the leg, that, you know, it papaya orders, and then they elaborated later on that they meant that it was okay to race each other. And we saw that, obviously, as we've discussed in the initial stages of the race itself. So again, this goes back to what I said earlier. I scratch my head at their strategy, because I feel like I don't know if they're trying different things out to see how the outcomes are going to benefit them. But ultimately, if we're looking at trying to maximize the points, which I think always should be the priority, I don't see how that really excelled this weekend. I think strategy was unfortunately their biggest weakness. Since we're talking about McLaren, I think maybe, and strategy, what about the important, I would say, probably the most pivotal decision that secured Leclerc his podium finish, and that was a decision to pit Piastri when they did for the final pit stop when he already was in P1. I'm going to put this to you, Friso, first of all. Do you think that it would have made sense to take the risk to try to see if they could go the distance with the tires that he had, although his tire degradation, and we could see the McLarens clearly did have issues with tire degradation this weekend, but do you believe that it would have been more of a stable result to keep him there, or was it the right decision to pit?
That's difficult. I think no one saw it really coming that one stopper was possible. So I think they just made him like, okay, like, let's go for new tires because Ferrari is probably doing a two stopper as well, like every team was doing. So I think they made the decision based on the fact that everyone will do a two stopper. So yeah, if you look at it that way, I think yeah, of course, it's smart to do a new tires at that point because I think it was the right point if they were doing a two stopper to do a two stopper. But at the same time, they didn't see coming that Ferrari would do a one stop and actually win the race. So yeah, and I think looking back at the point you said before about the Norris and Piastri overtaking or letting overtake, I think actually McLaren really focusing on the constructors' championship. And I think they already probably did the calculations that they couldn't really win the driver's championship anymore, competing to Max Verstappen. So I think they're just really focusing on getting two happy drivers and securing that constructors' championship. And I think that's why they're making certain strategies. I'm not sure, but of course there's speculations. But it looks like what they're doing, it looks like they're focusing on the constructors at first. Yeah.
And I'd love to hear your thoughts as well, Anton, when it comes to this decision. Do you think the same? Like, do you believe that pit stop should have happened? Do you believe that the outcome may have changed if it didn't?
What I didn't understand is why Piastri just didn't wait for Leclerc to make the pit stop first, because, like Friso was saying, I think everyone was expecting everybody to do a two-stopper. And if Ferrari, I don't think Leclerc was planning for the one-stopper at all. So if McLaren would have just waited slightly longer, then Ferrari, Leclerc would have pitted and Piastri would have been able to pit and keep the lead. If anyone was planning for a two-stopper, I think it was in the back of Sainz's head the whole time. From the start of the race, I mean, he pitted relatively late compared to the other top four teams. He pitted on lap 19. So yeah, all in all, I think it was a little bit, I don't want to call this a lucky win for Leclerc. I mean, in the end, it was a great drive from him, but strategy-wise, I think it was a given opportunity for them. I mean, he pitted on lap 14, which at that point, yeah, I thought that was relatively early. Yeah, I mean, with with how things played out and with Piastri pitting, I think you still need to grasp the opportunities that you're given. So talking a little bit about that that Leclerc win, I think it was a great drive. And you know, in the start of the weekend with the practice sessions where we were looking at graining and the different teams and how they would do on long runs, I definitely did not expect Ferrari to be the team here to win it with a long-lasting tire strategy, let's say. So all in all, that was quite a bit of a surprise. Again, like I said, I don't think it was planned, but then again, that's Formula One sometimes for you. I mean, you need to be able to adapt and to react. And Ferrari did well in that respect. And not only was it a great drive by Leclerc, I also think that he does have signs to thank for it to a certain extent, because he did manage to hold up Piastri for a little bit, not for too long, but I think just long enough also for it to not become too exciting at the end. So, all in all, you know, Ferrari playing a pretty good team game, a pretty good strategy all in all, even if it wasn't planned for. And of course, if you want to get race wins, and Leclerc doesn't get them very often, but he picks his races this year with a Monaco win and a Monza win. I think if he would have had the calendar before the start of the season and he could pick out two to win, I think it would probably have been these two.
Oh, most definitely. I think that, I mean, it was a, I said this at the beginning of the episode, it was also an emotional win. And I feel like the two most emotional wins out of this entire calendar this year has been, for me, Monaco and Monza. And both of them, coincidentally, are the Leclerc wins. And it's not just because it's Leclerc winning. I think it's more so the entire situation that runs behind that. You know, you touched on the fact that the tire degradation and surprisingly it was Ferrari that seemed to excel in managing their tires effectively. And I think you make a very, very good point going back to the situation with Piastri if he had just waited. I think that I completely agree with you on that point. I think it more so wouldn't have been a situation where he would have outlasted, but more so just hang in there, because I agree with you. I think that the Ferrari would have eventually pitted, and that would have, if he could have just outlasted that moment, he would have probably secured the win. But going back to the tire degradation on the Ferrari side, I thought both drivers put on a great, fantastic result to be able to maintain those tires that typically we see them struggle with. That's an area we typically see struggling. Last year, we saw that consistently. This year, we have seen an improvement. But overall for Leclerc, I mean, he managed to go 38 laps on those hards. I mean, that is just a masterclass in itself. So very well done on his end. And also for Sainz, like you said, I think that although he couldn't hold Piastri back entirely, the fact that he was able to do just enough to give the advantage, I think it was over 2 seconds, the gap it was when Leclerc crossed the checkered flag, in comparison to Piastri. So it was enough. It was enough to secure things. And interestingly also, Sainz, it's almost like he foreshadowed the situation happening, because in the very beginning of the race, early on during the first pit stops that were taking place, he mentioned the fact on the radio that he didn't mention what teams, but he did specify that he thought that teams were going to struggle with the tire degradation. So I found that interesting, because it was almost like a foreshadowing that was a huge pivotal reason why they ended up winning the way that they did. So yeah, I think it was a great result for Leclerc. I also think that it was just, there's always that phrase, everybody's a Ferrari fan. And I think that regardless of whether you have a team that isn't Ferrari, it's just a great thing to witness, to see all of the fans celebrate the way that they do. It's in Monza. It's their Ferrari driver that wins. I mean, how much more amazing does it get to see something like that?
I was sitting next to somebody on a couch, actually, who had Piastri on P1 in his predictions. I didn't see him celebrate too much, but
I can understand why.
I completely agree. I mean, in general, yeah, I think it was very exciting. I'm not a huge Ferrari fan, but this gave me goosebumps too. I mean, it was very nice to see.
I think also Leclerc, like, securing that race, like, in Monza, Italy, must be very good feeling for him. And I really hope going further in the future for coming races, he might get his drive back and maybe win some more races, because I really like to see that.
Well, the only thing I'm thinking is that the other side of the coin is that who was doing damage control this weekend was Russell, who struggled because of Antonelli crashing his car. He didn't have much running time in FP2. He did in FP3, but seemed to struggle also. Well, actually, his qualifying day was very good, but then in the race, he got off the line quite well. He was fighting with Piastri, but didn't make the first corner, and went off track and damaged his front wing end plate there. And I guess from there onward, it was an uphill battle. He lost a lot of time at first, because of the damage that he had. Then he had to change his front wing, In the end, not a great race from Russell. Then again, still, you know, quite impressive to still finish on seventh position, I would say, still finishing ahead of Perez. Yeah, other than, and then Russell, there were a couple of other drivers who had to do some damage control or had to take some damage, let's say, with a couple of penalty points for Magnussen, leading to his race ban for Baku, for Azerbaijan. So we will very likely see Oliver Behrmann again in Formula One, this time not in a Ferrari but in a Haas.
Right. And I think this was I think this is actually now the first F1 driver to ever receive a race ban like this. Am I correct?
Yeah,
that's correct. That's right. Since 2014. So already 10 years, and then and he's the first one actually, Magnussen to get that one. Yeah.
I think
Anton,
actually,
you're laughing.
Actually, to be really honest with you, I thought it was slightly harsh on Magnussen because, yes, if you look at the incident there, he did lock up. But actually, if you look at it, he was pretty tight on that apex still, even though he locked up. I mean, he still made the corner. So, yeah, he caused a lot of smoke locking up his tires and everything. But I don't think he was... It was, you know, I understand that he got a penalty, but I also understand Haas being quite furious because all in all... I think it was with Ocon, right? And I don't think Ocon left a lot of space there either, regardless of whether Magnussen was having a lockup or no. So, not sure. I mean, I'm actually quite excited to see Behrmann again on the grid, but not sure it was entirely fair. Friso?
I actually agree. I think the penalty system is for drivers that are driving too hard and... too aggressively and unsafe, and I don't really feel that was the case in this crash, actually, or crash. It wasn't really a crash, I suppose. It was more of a touch. I mean, yeah, he should have gotten maybe a penalty, but not this harsh. I agree.
Yeah, exactly. Like 10 seconds in the race, that I understand, but the penalty points, the two penalty points, are a little bit harsh. We had a couple of other incidents where Ricardo at the first lap pushed off Hülkenberg, got 5-second penalty for that. Then I guess it was Hülkenberg who wanted to get back at the V-carbs, and then also because of a lockup, basically he crashed into Tsunoda, causing 10-second penalty for him, which I think was fair. Ricardo serving his penalty, did not serve it correctly. That was not entirely Ricardo's fault himself, was it, Sam?
Yeah, that was a painful one. The reason why I think it was so painful is twofold. Obviously, one, it wasn't his fault. It was a error during the pit stop from one of the pit stop crew members. But also, I thought he actually... really was driving. I thought he was having actually a great race. I think that we saw him acting a lot more aggressively. He was doing really well on the overtakes. He had some pace in the car. So I thought he started in P11. He had an opportunity to actually get some points for the Racing Bulls, especially now with the result with Tsunoda being a DNF. So I thought that we were seeing a little bit of spunk in his drive. And so with that being said, it was really disappointing to see him receive a 10-second penalty. I thought that obviously I can understand that that is the time that they're going to receive. But I mean, when it comes out like that, it's unfortunate. Now, mind you, he still managed to put his elbows out in several situations after that and come out with, I would say, a half-decent result considering the circumstances.
Yeah, he finished 13th just behind Colapinto. Actually, right. not a bad drive from Colapinto either. Finishing 12th on your debut in a Williams. That's not too bad altogether, is it?
Not a bad result at all. I mean, I would say that for Williams, at least, maybe it just reaffirms the decision that they made, that it was a better decision to hopefully give them an opportunity for two drivers to secure some points before the end of the season. right. So let's get into the results from this weekend for the Forecast F1. Anton, let's start with the players as we always do. I believe we hit a record this weekend, did we not?
That we did indeed. We had 1,117 people playing the game. The previous record was at the first race this season in Bahrain. We had 1,094. So a new player record, which I'm very happy with. And let's see where we can go from here. And starting to put a couple of questions for you guys regarding the stats for this weekend. My first question would be, how many people do you think correctly predicted this very podium with P1 Leclerc, P2 Piastri, P3 Norris out of 1,117 people, Sam?
I'm going to say 14.
Oh, I think that's actually might be actually pretty true. I'm going to say a little more, maybe 15, I'd say.
All right. Well, I don't know whether to say to disappoint you, but it's only one player that correctly
wow.
had this order of the podium. Yeah.
Wow. I'm actually a little surprised.
There were quite a few people that went with Leclerc, Piastri, but then most of them either had Verstappen or Sainz on the third step of the podium. So only one person getting the podium right and thereby also actually winning this weekend. But we'll get to that in a bit. First, average scores. We had average score of 34.4 points. And the lowest score
this weekend.
Well,
that I'm not surprised about.
Yeah, not too high, but I guess, you know, recently with the races being a lot less predictable, scores are also going down on average. Lowest score was 4.8 points. And looking at the podium for this weekend, we had a Brazilian on the third step of the podium, Iago Junqueira, 73 points and good result. But beaten by our P2, Rick Smits from the Netherlands, 83.5 points. But I think, this is a really, I'm very surprised by P1 scoring 99 points this weekend out of a possible 102 points. Yeah.
Wow.
That was Panos Karadimos from Greece. And I think it's only fair to list his prediction for this weekend. He went with he went with P1 Leclerc, P2 Piastri, P3 Norris, so that was the podium. He had on P4 Sainz, correct. P5 Hamilton, correct. P6 Verstappen, correct. P7 Russell, also correct. P8 Perez, correct. So he had the first eight places all in the right order. And then went with Alonso, who finished 11th, so didn't get any points for that. He misses out 2 points there. He still scores 1 point with his P10, because he put Albon there, who finished on P9. So he still gets 50% of the 2 points that Albon scores. And had Sainz on fastest lap, so didn't get the fastest lap point, but only missing out on 3 out of the 102 points, getting a score of 99. That's pretty impressive.
Unbelievable.
Congratulations to him.
And we also actually the highest Italian finisher for Monza finished on P5, also noteworthy to mention. And with high scores, Panos with 99 points now makes it to P3 in the worldwide high scores, just behind Ana Cardenas, who had a perfect score with 102 points for Japan, and Rosario Finzi with 100 points in Spain. Panos is also now second in Europe with that score of 99 points. Other than that, in the continental high scores, we only had one person moving in. Otis Stolzenberg from Australia finished on P8 for this weekend with 70.3 points and now makes it to P14 in his continent on the high scores. I mentioned Rosario Finzi there. He's still on P1. For the overall competition. Actually, there's no movements in the top three. So Rosario Finzi scored 37.9 points. Coincidentally, that's also his lead towards P2, where we still see Sumit Jaiswal, who gotten there in the race in the Netherlands. He scored 24 points. And our P3, Annelie Beumer from the Netherlands, scored 34.9 points. So no movements in the top three. which, well, before we move to our own scores, I would first like to mention that we had players from new countries playing the game. So we had our first ever player from Somalia playing for this weekend, and we had the first player this season from Samoa, and the first player this season from Estonia. And Sam, actually, we talked about this last weekend, from which countries we have the most player per race weekend. Where do you think we had the most players from this weekend? From which country?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I'm going to stick with Kenya.
Again, we had the most players from Kenya. That's right. We had 107 players from Kenya. On P2, Argentina. I guess the Argentinians were excited to predict. I saw a lot of P10 Colapinto in their predictions. Unfortunately, didn't score any points. And on third places was it was India. If we're looking at the country rankings in the top 25, India overtakes the Dominican Republic for P11. Kenya, with that amount of players, move up to place P13. They're moving five places up. Zambia is moving up four places to P21. And most places gained was Northern Mariana. They gained eight places and they went to P129. Sam, I think it's time to talk about our scores. And I had a little laugh there, but to be honest, you far outscored me this weekend. So congratulations to you. Do you remember what podium
that's
you went
shocking.
With?
I do. I went with Norris, Piastri, and Verstappen, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So getting Piastri right on P2 obviously got you 18 points. You scored 48.9 points in total. You're on P170 this weekend, 170.
Okay. Well, that's a lot better than last weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, so you're moving back up a couple of spots. So you were on P66 after the race in Zandvoort. You're now on P48.
Really? Okay. Well, top 50. I'll take that.
Then moving to Friso, actually, to give you a bit of credit, you're the only player so far to have finished in the top 20 in two seasons of Forecast F1. You finished in the top 20 in 2022 and in 2023. So you're the only player ever to to get to that. Actually, we have a player who was in the top, who won last year, is still in the top 20 this year. So he might be able to to get the same get on that list too. But do you remember what prediction you made for what podium prediction you made for Monza?
Yeah, I did. I mean, if the Red Bull strategists are going to hire me, I really hope they look at last year and the year before that, because this year it's been kind of a shit show for me. I had Verstappen, Norris, and Sainz. Of course, none of that being actually true. Quite painful.
Yeah, but you still scored more points than I did. But you scored 30.5 point, thereby being on P613, and you're losing a couple of spots in the championship. You're going from P162 to P172. But as I mentioned, still more points than I scored. I went with Norris, Verstappen, and Piastri. And I scored only 25.8 points, being on P811 this weekend. And in the standings, I moved down a couple of places from P2. I was on P22, and I'm going to P35. Actually, Friso, your father overtook me. He passed me on the ranking. So, not a great result for me. So, I guess it's time to move on, and let's play our weekly quiz. And Sam, you got closer to the amount of people on the who got the podium right. So actually, you can choose whether you start or not. For those not listening every race, so what we're going to do is we're going to guess out of all the people playing the game, the 1,117 people, how many people had each driver predicted on the spot that they finished on. So Sam, we're going to start obviously with P1 Leclerc. Do you want to go first?
Ooh, you know what? I'm gonna put this to Friso first. I'll let him take the lead on how many people he thinks Leclerc. Oh my goodness, I can't even think properly. That's why Friso, you're going first.
All right, I think Leclerc. Let's see. I think we'll be at around 80 people.
I think that's a pretty good guess. I'm gonna go a little lower than you. I'm going to say 65.
Well, surprisingly, a lot of people had quite a bit of confidence in Leclerc, because there was 141 people who went with the Leclerc win. So,
oh, wow.
So that first point goes to Friso. And Sam, that means it's your turn for the first McLaren, who finished on P2, Piastri.
Okay. I am going to go with 78.
I think actually it might be a little bit higher. I think that's around, 90.
Nice. You got, well, both of you got close, but Friso, you got very close. It was 93 people who had Piastri on P2, so
nice.
Not a point for you.
Wow.
And
not
that
bad,
means
not
we
bad.
Get to the we get to the second McLaren, Norris on P3. That one's for Friso again.
Norris P3. I think a lot of people had him on P1. So I think we'll be around 105.
Okay, I'm going to go a little higher than you. I'm going to say 121.
And that's the right strategy call, Sam. It was 133, so that's your first point for the weekend. It's one against two, and it's your turn to go with Sainz, P4. How many people put Sainz on P4?
I'm going to say quite a few, actually. I'm going to say 136.
That actually might be a good call. I'm going a little lower. I think 125.
That was actually a really good call indeed, Sam. You're only one off. It was 137.
Wow.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. All right. It's two against two. We're going with the first Mercedes finish, which was Hamilton on P5. Friso.
Hamilton P5. I think might be a lot of people actually guess that. So I think go for 140.
Okay, I'm going to go with 174.
Friso, you are only 17 places off. And Sam, you're also 17 places off. It's right
what?
In the middle. It's 157. So,
oh my gosh!
I guess that means you shared a. Actually, we had a.
Has this ever happened before, though? I don't think we've ever been this close, like a point a difference.
Well, I think what we should do is the same as didn't it happen in F2. We had a P8 finish, two drivers who crossed the line at the same point, and they shared the point. So I guess we're gonna do the
sure.
same thing over here. You both get half a point.
All right, I'll take that.
All right, meaning we go to Verstappen on P6, Sam.
Oh, I think this is going to be low. I'm going to say three people.
Well, I'm sorry, but I already checked the forecast F1 chat, and someone said, I have Verstappen on six. So I know it's at least one.
Well, plus the winner had Verstappen on P6 too, so I don't know if it was
it
the
could,
winner
right.
who,
have,
who talked on the
it
chat.
It could have
so
been the
might
winner.
Be two already. Yeah,
it could have been the winner.
Did you ask him where he was from?
No, I did not. I think it might be a little more. I'm going for four.
All right, that's a good strategy call. It was actually quite a few more. There was 26 people who had him on P6, surprisingly.
Wow, that is surprising.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that either.
I think the confidence in Max Verstappen is really getting quite low now.
What about confidence in Russell finishing around P7, Friso?
I'm not sure about that one. I think Mercedes was quite a difficult one this race. I think around 65.
Okay, I'm gonna go up. There, I'm going to say 77.
Okay, all right. Well, interestingly, it was a lot more. So it's Sam that takes the point. It was 359 people who had Russell on P7.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to say probably because of the fact that, I mean, again, you have a grid that's so tight now. You have a lot. You're in Italy, so it's the Italian Grand Prix. You probably have a lot of people choosing Ferrari up in the top. You have the McLarens, you have the Red Bull. So, I can understand why Russell, a lot of people would pick Russell in that position.
I'm starting to think of a bonus question, because usually we have 11 questions with the fastest lap, but now that you got a draw on one of the questions, if you do get a tie, I'm thinking about the bonus question.
I actually feel pretty stupid, because looking back at my score, I actually had Russell at P7. So
I had him at P8, to be honest. I guess a lot of people had Mercedes around those positions. The bonus question would be, because we might never ever get to it, but the bonus question would be, how many people had Colapinto in their top 10? But anyway, let's see if we would get to that. First, I want to hear from Sam how many people had the other Red Bull on P8, Perez.
Oh, I'm going to say pretty high. I'm going to go 283.
283, that's high. I think it's a little lower, might be 260, let's say.
It's actually not lower, it's actually higher. It's 492 people who had P8.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, that's almost half the people playing. Well, not quite, but quite a lot. So actually that point goes to Sam. So it's 4.5 against 3.5. There's three remaining questions. We first go to Albon on P9. That one's for Friso.
Albon on P9. I think it might also be quite a lot of people. Not as much as Perez. I think, let's say 180.
Okay, I think that's a fair guess, but I'm going to go a little lower than you, and I'm going to say 140.
Well, Sam, close guess. It was 148. So that's another point for you. You're on fire this weekend.
I don't know what happened.
Well, let's see if you can finish it off. You're up for Magnussen on P10.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go lower on this. I'm going to say 13.
I think it's higher. I'd say 15.
Friso, I think it's going to be very difficult to beat Sam this weekend. You got it right, Sam. It was 13 people.
Was it really?
No way.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm definitely surprised by this. I don't know what to say. I wish it would translate into my Forecast F1 results, but I'll take the win.
Yeah, you should. I guess we're all a little surprised. No, just kidding. It's a really good guess. I'll let the fastest lap guess to be for Friso. How many people had Norris on that fastest lap?
I think 478 people.
Okay, I'm going to go with 389.
Okay, that points for Sam too. It was 541. Incredible, almost half of the people.
That's...
No, that would be Friso, no?
That would be mine, right?
Then I didn't hear your... What did you say, Sam?
I
said 389, Friso. You said it before.
Sorry, I wrote... Okay, all right. I wrote 489 for you, Sam. Sorry, so that's why I thought you had... Okay, that one goes to Friso. Unfortunately, you still don't win it with that, Friso, because it's... it's... let me check the score. It's 6.5 against 4.5. But all right, I do add that last point to your tally.
That's unfortunate, but congratulations, Sam.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
That is unfortunate. That means we need to finish off with the Canadian anthem again, I guess.
Or like we discussed last episode, we can have a song of my choosing, or maybe something that's, you know what, I think maybe in the spirit of Monza, maybe we pick the Italian anthem.
It's just not how it works. It's just not how it works.
I'm trying to bend the rules. What can I say?
Yeah, not in your favor.
I'm trying to.
Actually. I mean,
I'm trying to save
proud.
Every. Oh no, definitely I'm proud, but I'm trying to be the considerate one for everyone's ears. I'm not sure if everyone wants me to go on a Verstappen run and listen to the Dutch anthem as much as or the Canadian anthem as much as they listened to the Dutch anthem last year, but.
Well, I can sort of imagine people are happy you won it and don't need to listen to the Dutch anthem again if Friso would have won it anyway. I guess that means we're into a, well, I wouldn't call it a break. We're going to have an actual break a little bit later, two races from now, because between Singapore and the race in Austin, there's quite a lot of time. There's like 4 weeks. But in 2 weeks, we're first going to go to Azerbaijan, Baku. Are you looking forward to that?
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's not my favorite track when it comes to excitement and overtakes, but visually, I mean, it is a beautiful track to watch a race. But I'm always excited to see what happens. And I think obviously if any indication of every race pretty much up to this point, I don't doubt the fact that there is going to maybe be some surprises. So yeah, Friso, what are you looking forward to next weekend?
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of street circuits as well. But aside from that, I think the whole podium is like opened up right now because of everything that's happening with other teams. So yeah, still exciting to see who will win. But I think overtaking will be quite hard since, yeah, it's a street circuit, of course. But yeah, of course, always exciting to see a new race.
I guess the interesting thing is that, because I agree actually with you, I'm also not the biggest fan of street circuits, but what is interesting about Baku is that it's quite all round. I mean, you have a long straight, you have a couple of 90 degrees corners, but the middle section is quite slow. So I guess in that respect, it's difficult. You can go with different types of setups. All in all, I would say that looking at the last couple of races, it looks like McLaren is the most all-round car if you look at high-speed corners, low-speed corners. So yeah, I guess for them it should be, well, it should be one of the weekends again where they narrow the gap between their point tally and that of Red Bull. I think the difference now in points, is it only 8 points for the Constructor Championship?
Yeah, it's only 8. Yeah,
yeah, it's very close.
And I think Red Bull's quite bad on street circuits as well, so I think they will probably close the gap.
Well, Pires is supposedly good on street circuits, isn't he?
Well, yeah, he is.
Anton, I can hear your smile as you say that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the end,
poor Perez. Look, we give him a hard time. I mean, but at the same time, I think about it from the from the Red Bull side. I don't know if we're going to see any surprises out of him the next race coming up in a positive way. But you know what? You never know. He may just be in a position where he secures pole. And really, on a track like this, pole is a pretty secure spot to sit in if you manage to land it for the Sunday to then go into Sunday's race.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things is we didn't talk about that when we were talking about the choice for Colapinto, but I think one of the reasons that Williams didn't want to go with Lawson is that Red Bull basically said that, you know, they want to have the right to call him back at any given point when they would want to, and I guess that sort of signals also the amount of pressure that there is on Perez. On the other hand, I guess there was already a lot of pressure on him for the second half of the season. He's he ends in the points twice, not on very high positions, 6th and 8th, but then again, if you look at the Red Bull, I think we can all agree that it's not the fastest car anymore. So yeah, it will be interesting to see how he performs in Baku, where he won, well, that was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he had actually a really decent race at that time. He made some pretty fantastic moves during that period.
Yeah. But yeah, what you said, Sam, I agree. Getting pole in Baku definitely helps along. So will be very interesting to see how the teams get back. And yeah, I think we've been saying that for the past couple of races, but it's becoming more and more difficult also to decide who you're going to put on that first spot for forecast. To be honest, it doesn't happen a lot that I don't put Verstappen on P1. I did it for the first time this weekend. I think a lot of people did it for the first time last weekend, and this weekend we did not get to see a Norris win either. But I might actually go for another McLaren win for the next weekend. But we have some time to think about it. It's 2 weeks from now. But exciting. Interested to see how many people will go with Verstappen and Norris on P1, and how many people are going with something alternative. Because like you said, I mean, Mercedes has been winning races too. Another win for Ferrari. I mean, it's really all open.
It really is, and that's what makes it exciting. That's what makes it something that for us F1 fans, I know I speak for myself here, and I probably speak for many people, that's what makes it so much fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Friso, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It was very nice. Shame you couldn't win the quiz, but I'll be sure to invite you another time so you can get a revenge at Sam.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it, and I really want to get back at Sam, so please have me on another time.
Oh, the door is always open, Friso.
Great.